Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes, subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 974. It's the 23rd of January, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Patrick Cullen, CEO of Connemara Mining, a CON, and Patrick gives a prospecting update on their Wicklow Wexford gold prospects. Also on the podcast, Melissa Sturgis, Executive Director of URA Holdings. And Melissa discusses the progress they're making in finding an investment and also goes into her background and experience. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications, talking about URA Holdings, who Melissa, of course, is Executive Director of. Tertiary Minerals, TYM, and LPA Group, that's LPA ticker. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Patrick Cullen, CEO of Connemara Mining. That's C-O-N ticker. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Good to talk to you.
Now, a few days back, 11th of January, you announced some decent results there, and we'll go through that an update from the Wicklow Wexford Gold Project, and we'll go through that in a bit. Before we do, Patrick, there are people listening probably just tuned in, or they've not heard of Connemara Mining. Can you explain what you're all about, please?
Okay, so Justin, a pleasure. Connemara is a junior exploration company. We're 100% focused in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, which we believe is an excellent jurisdiction in terms of political and fiscal stability, and also excellent for geology. So we have we're diversified. We're in zinc. Mm-hmm. We've got some very interesting projects with some significant joint venture partners in zinc, and also we have two gold projects: one in Donegal in the northwest of the country, and one in Wicklow Wexford. And these are both these gold projects are 100% Connemara, and we're actively exploring and been drilling on both those projects. The gold results we've had in, some very good results, have just come in early January from Wicklow Wexford. And I'd like to talk about those.
Yeah, go for it. So take us through that, because I know you're quite happy there. It seems quite positive in the statement, but take us through it if you could, Patrick.
Yeah, so what we basically have, what we did last year in September was we managed to reverse a joint venture arrangement we had with a former joint venture partner, acquire their gold assets in Wicklow Wexford, along with our own, to put together a group of about a 15-kilometer trend from geophysics and historic soil sampling, rock sampling, and drilling, going back some 30 years. So what we did is we drilled on two locations, and we've really started now to focus in on one particular area, Gibbet Hill, Knockalure, and down and up to Tom Breen. Now, Tom Breen, we drilled a hole grading 2 meters at 16.1 grams a ton. What was particularly significant, I think, about that, that's a very good grade, of course, but also that was within an 8 meter interval, grading at 4.53 grams a ton. Mm-hmm. So we know from historic drilling that there's been grades in the region of 20 grams a ton in the past, some 20 years ago and beyond that. 20 grams a ton over half meter intervals, that sort of thing, at this Tom Breen, at Knockalur. But what hadn't been done was they hadn't sampled the full intervals, it appears. And so that was particularly exciting to get the 8 meter interval, because of course all of that is, you know, good grade over such an interval. Of course, with the 16 grams a ton, 16 grams a ton is significant there. So, and these were drilled at, you know, shallow depths, you know, some sort of, say, call it 60, 80 meters below surface. Certainly not, there's no surface in, this is bedrock gold, you know, we're pretty excited about it. In fact, we've also got some historic holes, and we're going to be seeing those quite soon. So I can, you know, that'll be news that'll be coming out in a month's time. Say we're going to see these holes in early February. They're sitting at a core store at the Geological Survey of Ireland, and we should be seeing them in the first week of February. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny, we just had a chat before I hit the record button here, and you mentioned something to me that I mentioned to another CEO of another gold company recently, and I said, I think I'm repeating this because it wrong, you know, it resonated what I said, and you said that you think gold will start to rally once these cryptocurrencies come off a bit, and I believe the same, because I've heard people are using a hedge, Bitcoin, as a hedge, you know, as a safe haven, but now it's come back from like $20,000 to $10,000, half the price. You can see gold is creeping up slowly, isn't it?
I think, yeah. I mean, there was an article in the Evening Standard yesterday to that effect as well. There'd been some, you know, certainly some physical gold purchasing happening. People taking the money out of the cryptocurrencies, putting it into physical gold. And yeah, the logical step is that you're going to be invested in gold mining companies. And if you're looking for multiples, certainly you're going to be investing in you know, gold exploration companies. Look, in the Irish context, you know, Connemara, we're actively exploring for gold in Ireland. And a lot of people look at Ireland, I think a lot of UK investors look at Ireland and say, you know, well, never had a commercial gold mine. I think there's a couple of things here. We have a very, you know, a significant history in mining in the zinc space, of course. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that more in the few minutes to come. But, mm-hmm. you know, Dalradian Resources, Canadian London listed, are in the process, you know, they're planning permission to build a mine in County Tyrone over the border in Northern Ireland. I think that's really starting to, you know, open people's eyes to the fact that, you know, this is a jurisdiction, this is a gold mining province that's emerging now, you know. And we will be active again in Donegal. We were at the end of last summer. We had we've had some good early success on Greenfield project in Donegal, that's in the county adjacent to Tyrone where Dalradian are active. You know, we think that's compelling. But these grades coming out of Wicklow Wexford, good solid grades in you know, over long strike lengths. Now that geophysics is 15 kilometers, and the historic is 15 kilometers. But what this recent drilling is allowing us to do is really just get focus. You know, mm-hmm. So we're saying now, okay, there's still work to be done there, but we've got absolute focus on this Wicklow Wexford project now. We know where we're going to be drilling next. We're going to be looking at historic. That's going to, you know, boost us as well. If we can get better grade, if we can say, okay, they assayed 50 centimeters at 20 grams a ton here, but look, we've taken some more sample here, and look, the interval is actually a lot wider than that. So that just, you know, a bit more focus there. I think that's what also that's important. We are a junior, so, you know, we don't have huge funds to be drilling out 15 kilometers. What we want to do now is really just firm up on this, demonstrate that there's a solid model, that there's gold there, and you know, attract investment into that directly, attract potentially joint venture partners. It's early days, but mm-hmm. That's the sort of plan. That's what we do. So
yeah. And take us, just summarize what's happening with zinc, the projects there.
Yeah, well, look, you know, zinc, we have three zinc acids, okay? Two of them are, I mean, when I say acids, these are blocks of ground, you know, significant blocks of ground. One is with is with Teck of Canada, obviously the major zinc producer. And there, that's in the northeast of the kind of the Irish zinc trend. It's not too far from the producing mine at Tara, that's Boliden's mine at Tara. They're actually going deep. That's a mine that's extending another 20 years. So we're expecting news now. They're doing their budgets and so forth. We're pretty hopeful that they'll get on and earning. They're basically earning into 75% of the project. They're at about 65%. So they need to spend another €250,000, call it £200,000, to sort of reach that goal. And that work has to happen in this year. And we expect work to happen there, you know, for certainly second quarter. More imminently, perhaps, is the Group 11. Group 11 have 76%+ of a project with us at Stone Park in Limerick. You know, one of the things that's been driving the zinc price is, you know, well, it's the public knows Glencore has been sort of tuning down their production on certain mines. There's supply tightness, right? There's many reasons for it, but Glencore, who are next door at the Palace Green project, next door to Stone Park, they've had a rig. They've had six rigs in there. Now we believe that rig counts up to like nine rigs. So there's something happening there for sure. We're over the fence with Group 11 in the Stone Park project. They've raised $5 million. They've got some other projects, but this is one of their primary projects, the Stone Park. So we've been talking to them, and we'll have feedback in probably a week or two as to what their schedule will be. So again, you know, on the zinc side, Connemara's, we've got good exposure for our shareholders there. And zinc's looking very solid, you know, 3,500 tons, Graham Sachs, Goldman Sachs say 3,500 tons this year. And that's of interest.
Yeah, excellent stuff. So just to summarize, so what's next then, Patrick?
Yeah, so the first thing, we're starting to get a bit more focus on the Wicklow Wexford project. We've got two historic holes, one from Tom Breen where we just got that excellent result, and another hole about 3 kilometers to the south from Knocknalure, and that's really going to be our area of interest. I'm hoping to be drilling there again in March, March, April. So we'll have some news coming out of there in sort of middle February. We'll say clearly what our drilling plan is, and you know, ahead of time, and work to that. We should have news flow right through February, March into April on the goal there. And also, we have to go back and look at Donegal. There's some work that'll be happening there in February on the geophysics side. I don't want to go into that too much detail. You know, drilling is what people are really interested in, I think. So the work there will lead to further drilling projects. We'll do some sampling and soil sampling in the interim. That's the plan for the year. And then, of course, we're going to be watching our zinc projects very closely.
Yeah. Well, as if to further summarise, Pat, if someone's listening right now and are not following the story but like the sound of this and what you're doing, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
That's really it. I mean, that's the reason we're talking this morning, is trying to get some more of the Vox people to follow us on the CON ticker. It's our market cap, number one. You know, we've got a long way to go. We've had a good rise late last year when we got busy and we did that acquisition of that joint venture and really put together a nice gold project in Wicklow Wexford. So our market cap. We've had some really good results in gold. You know, we've gone out there and demonstrated that there's gold where we thought it would be, where historically they've known it is, and there's results to come. So there'll be a news flow, and then we have this excellent exposure to zinc. We've got two very good joint venture projects, one where Teck of Canada are still earning in, and one where Group 11, who've just gotten listed in Toronto, are about to get busy. Yeah, so that's it. Gold and zinc in Ireland. That's Connemara.
Excellent. Patrick, good to chat to you. You keep me busy, so no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Justin. Have a great day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Melissa Sturgis, Executive Director of URA Holdings. And the ticker there is URA. Melissa, thanks for joining me.
Good morning from North America, Justin.
Yes, well, sure, the wonders of technology, eh? It sounds like you're sitting next to me, which is amazing. But
exactly.
Where in North America are you?
I'm actually in Vancouver at the moment and just looking at a few things over here over the next week or so, and back in London at the end of next week.
Yeah, is it cold over there? Because it's cold over here.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable, actually. I'd rather have a London cold than Vancouver cold.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, Vanessa, listen, I know several people have heard of you. You've a track record that people are proud of, I think. And I've seen people tweet about that when you first came to URA. You said, oh, look at this, interesting movements. So, but before we get into that, URA Holdings, summarise at the moment what the company is about, please.
Okay, we took control of this vehicle a couple of months ago. It had a uranium asset in Tanzania in it, which wasn't really going anywhere because of the uranium price. Mm-hmm. So we agreed with some of the major shareholders that they would remove the asset and cancel a whole lot of their debt and their equity in the company. We collapsed the capital structure and injected £900,000 of cash on the balance sheet with the support of Peterhouse Corporate Finance and a group of investors that myself and Peter Redman, the other director on the board, mm-hmm. A group of people that we know who have followed us and supported us in the past.
So now you're looking at investment vehicles, and obviously you can't say too much about that, but I suppose what we could do, I mean, is ask you about your background and so your strengths and what areas of business you like. So where have you come from to be where you are today, Melissa?
Yeah. Look, 20 plus years in the metals and mining space, predominantly in Africa. I've been involved in quite a few companies that have been listed on the ASX and on AIM. In more recent years, I've done stuff in the building materials space and slightly broader ranging in medtech and a few other sectors. So in terms of URA, we are sector agnostic, if you like. So we're not specifically looking at anything in terms of space. What we are looking for is something that's going to give our shareholders a really good return for backing us, and something that has some good growth prospects, whether that be capital growth and or some kind of earnings stream. We're pretty aggressively looking at the moment, and I must say the deal flow at the moment, Justin, is very good. There's some really nice businesses out there looking for a quoted platform.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. I'm sure shareholders will be pleased with that. So I'm sure shareholders, you know, and potential investors will be pleased with the sort of low overheads you've put in. Can you remind us of what you've done there in that area?
Yes. Look, there is no office. There's only three of us on the board. One of those directors is a legacy director from the previous management team. We're paying ourselves an absolute minimum. There are no other outgoings. So it's really a very, very, very lean structure. The reason for that is obviously shareholders want to see a return on their money, not to see us taking salaries. And we are some of the major investors in this company. And so we want to see a return on our capital rather than spending it on day-to-day sorts of things that quite often happens in some of these smaller AIM companies.
Yeah. And I suppose people sort of aware of your track record may think now that URA seems like a bit of a sort of carbon copy, if you were, of what you achieved at Message International and Sigma Rock. Can you talk us through the parallels of that, please?
Yeah, I suppose the main similarity is that we were able to remove the key asset of the previous business and really collapse the capital structure. So the legacy shareholders represent only a very small proportion of the company going forward. So it means that we've got a really nice tight structure and we don't have a lot of shareholders from the previous story, if you like. So I think that's one key similarity. Certainly the support of Peterhouse has been key in all of this. So their shareholders backed us in Messaging International and they are backing us again, which is fantastic. And what I think the other interesting thing is that with messaging, we did attract a really interesting and, if I say sexy deal, raised £50 million. And because of that, I think we're seeing some really good quality deal flow because people know that we have the ability to transact on something fairly sensible.
Yeah.
And something fairly interesting and exciting. Wow. So they're the parallels, tight capital structure and really the ability to go and do something quite exciting.
Exciting, yeah, exactly. And so what sort of transaction, would suit URA?
Look, we're looking at things in all spaces at the moment. I'm pretty confident that we will get to the point where we can perform or complete an RTO in the timetable that has been set for the Shell. As you know, these things have a six-month clock on them. So I'm confident that we will execute fairly quickly. We are in dialogue on a range of very interesting ideas at the moment. And, yeah, I'm pretty confident that we'll execute shortly.
So yeah, it is 6 months. From when is that? When was that clock started?
I think it was the 21st of December.
Yes. Do you know what?
Yeah, I think I'm right.
I'm looking at that date right there now, yes.
Yeah.
And so, excellent. So, and you're confident you'll get something in line for that. And it is, of all the projects you're looking at and the deals you're looking at, is there one at the moment that's particularly sort of sticking out?
There are a couple that are particularly sticking out. So it's a matter of choosing the best of a couple of really good ideas. So, feeling quite good about it at the moment. And look, the focus is on making our shareholders who invested up to date a really good return. Yeah. And a good return for ourselves, of course.
Yeah. It's quite funny. I'm sitting here thinking, come on, give us a clue, give us a hint. I know you can't.
Oh, you know how much trouble I get into if I do that.
I know exactly that. I know that, you know that, but it's one of these things, like, it's curiosity, isn't it? It
really, I know,
But, but you're saying it's exciting and obviously the shareholders are looking forward to that. And so, okay, Melissa, listen, I really, you know, would like to, you know, talk with you again when you can't update us on the detail of this, because it sounds exciting and you do sound...
Yeah, be delighted to, Justin.
Yeah, but before you go, on Vox Markets, we have a follow system where if someone hits the follow button on your page on Vox Markets, then they add you to their watch list, and anything you update the market with gets sent to them via notification. So give us three reasons why we should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Well, I suppose the first one is that we have done this before. So we have a track record of taking control of Shells and turning them into proper companies. So that's the first reason. The second one is we have a really nice, healthy balance sheet, about just over £850,000 of cash as at today. So we're certainly in a position to execute something very exciting. And the directors, my co-director Peter Redman and I, are two of the largest shareholders in the Shell. So we are certainly motivated to make something happen.
Excellent stuff, Melissa. Good to chat to you. And like you said, you know, you're honing in on a deal. So no doubt we'll chat in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
In the short term. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al?
Morning from a rainy Seaford. Just how are you?
I'm freezing cold, I've got to say. Do you know, we've had issues with our heating and stuff and using too much electric. So we've got a smart meter installed, and now they're going to look at our usage. So the missus said, right, try and keep it down. When you go in your office, don't put the heaters on. So I'm freezing cold. I just before I came on this call, I called her and said, I didn't even leave my... It's a 10-yard walk to the house. So I called her and said, listen, I'm putting the heaters on. I'm freezing. My hands are freezing. My feet are freezing. I can't talk hardly. I said, oh, okay then. But we got the smart meter thing, and it's obsessional because it tells you, you know, to the penny how much you're using per hour, and you can look back how much you used last day. And ideally, you know, you want to be using one penny an hour. But whenever it goes above that now, you start obsessing with things that are switched on. Right, turn the oven thing off, the oven display.
Yeah.
Turn the tellies off. Turn everything off. Everything. So sitting there dark. As long as you get it down to one pence, you don't mind. It's freezing cold. You're on one pence, you know. Yes.
As a guy that's halved his energy bills since switching supplier, I'm actually sitting here, the heating's on in the house, and I'm warm. I'm upstairs in the office, which is nice and warm, and we switched to People's Energy. This is the couple that broke away from energy suppliers they were working for, and founded this company called People's Energy, where they buy energy directly from the suppliers, and they move suppliers according to who the cheapest seller is, and they also pay back a percentage of their profits to their customers. So I moved away from utility warehouse and signed up with them, and literally my energy bills have halved. I mean, it's incredible. And yeah. And the thing is, now I'm happy to leave the heating on all day, because I'm paying half the amount I was, so that's fine.
So who's that with?
They're called People's Energy.
Okay, People's Energy, right. Well, yeah. Do you know what?
So if you Google People's Energy, they were featured on, I think it was one of these these Inside Out programs on Southern TV or whatever. And I just looked at them and I thought, that's a great idea. You know, you're actually getting money back. Switched, a very good website. I just literally take my meter readings, plug them into the website and generate a bill and away you go. And literally paying half of what I was paying with the utility warehouse.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Like I said, we're sitting here in the cold and the dark, and you know it's freezing cold. But at least we're on 1 penny an hour. That's where I derive my pleasure
that's
from.
Good.
It's
that's
miserable,
good.
Dark, and cold, but that 1 penny on that smart meter per hour is giving me all the cheer I need.
Excellent.
Right, let's talk about let's try and warm ourselves up by talking about some stocks and shares now. What are we looking at?
Some hot stocks. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Firstly, just quickly want to mention URA Holdings. Epicode is URA. Now, this is the cash ale. We spoke about it a few weeks ago. It was the company came to my attention through a colleague of mine in the city who said, David Steinpress is picking up stock in the open market. He wasn't involved in the fundraise last year. He's built, David Steinpress, of course, is ex Norseman Gold, Ascent Capital Holdings, North River Resources, so on and so forth. He's built up nearly 4% stake in the company. The company raised 900,000 last year at 0.45p. Melissa Sturgis and Peter Redman came on, and last week Melissa Sturgis bought some more stock in the open market in the run-up to the AGM, which is on Friday. Now, under AIM rules, they had to announce an acquisition or an investment into a project within 6 months. So they've got up until June to do that. But I think with the AGM on Friday, we're hoping to hear some more about what the plans are. But with people of this caliber on board, it could be very exciting. But clearly, that's all we know at present. So it is highly speculative. So do your own research. But I have taken a small
punt.
Holding myself. A punt, indeed. A punt,
it's an educated punt. But I've got to say, Melissa Sturgis may be on the podcast today. We're recording this early, and it was sort of lined up, and so we don't know if it's going out or not, whether she will be on, but hopefully she will. So, yeah.
Excellent.
So maybe I'll be
That's
having
good.
A chat with her. But anyway, anything else, Hal, you're looking at?
Yeah, number two, I want to talk about tertiary minerals. And, of course, you had Richard Clemmy, the Managing Director of Tertiary Minerals, on the show last week. And, of course, just to recap, tertiary minerals are the only UK AIM-listed fluorspar trading company. Fluorspar, as Richard explained last week, is the material that's used in smelting. It's used in a whole raft of applications, optics, and it's classed by the EU and the US and China as a critical mineral, without which all of these processes would grind to a halt. So tertiary have three projects. They have the Storuman project in Sweden, Lassedalen in Norway, and the MB project in Nevada, with a JORC resource estimate of some 13.1 million tonnes. And of course, with fluorspar selling at $370 a tonne.
Well, at the start of the year, it was like $300, but now I see a range here, Chinese acid grade, wet filter cake, whatever that is. It's between $320-$350. So if you say 320, let's say the bottom end of that, times that by 13 million, which is what they've got, isn't it? Isn't it what tertiary minerals have got in resource there?
That's it.
So that's $4.1 billion worth of assets they have.
Exactly.
And they're a 6 million market cap company. And I said this to Richard, I said, listen, Alan came on the podcast and he did talk about your assets quite a lot. But the problem with small mining companies is not how much you've got. I always look for, small companies with big assets. It's always a good thing because when that asset, when the price of that asset starts to, go northwards, obviously the value of the company goes up. But it's the problem they have, small mining companies, getting it out of the ground. That's the most expensive part, of course, is creating building the mine.
Indeed,
But since he did that deal with Possil, which is a global commodity trader, that eases their route to financing the mine, doesn't it?
Well, it does it massively. But also, prior to the Possil deal, we saw several events in the fluorspar market globally last year, which indicates that there is a turn in the market. For example, the Mildram mine in the north of England, a British fluorspar have invested into that, into making the mining production there more efficient. That was on the IMFOR. R-E-M-E-D website. And also in Canada, the town of St. Lawrence, there's a fluorspar mine there. The Canadian government invested $5 million into reactivating the mine, creating a load of new jobs, and starting production again. So all around the world, we're seeing these events. And then, of course, we had the Posel deal last year, where Posel basically have said, we will buy 70% of the output from the mines. We will help in providing finance to get the mines into production, building the infrastructure, etc. And also, we will help with providing finance into acquisitions, which Richard is currently engaged with. I know he's away again, and he was away prior to the podcast last week, looking at these acquisitions. And I mean, that's just an incredible deal. But also, I think Richard is naturally conservative.
He's a bit backward coming forward. I mean, in promoting the company, you know, I mean, he's a sharp actually, guy, knows his stuff, but it's quite good sometimes. What you don't want is a manager over-promotes too much, you know, and Richard doesn't do
exactly.
That.
He doesn't do that at all, and that's always been a big sort of tick in my book. You know that Richard does play it down. He's not overly bullish about it. But if you look at Richard's been working with Michael Fanger from Posel for over 20 years. They worked on different projects together. So Michael Fanger knows Richard and knows the company inside out. And that deal is a landmark deal for the company, but also I believe for the fluorspar market globally, because they have agreed to buy 70% of the output and provide this finance, which is fantastic. And in the next few months, I know we'll hear more about the acquisitions that Richard's currently pursuing, and then the plans that Posel will bring to bear with Tertiary to accelerate the development of these mines and get them into production. So, you know, Tertiary is at a fantastic stage, and as you said right at the start, the company's worth some 5 to 6 million quid only at the moment, with assets of over 4 billion. So do the math.
And it'll have, you know, like I said, at the moment, it's not a good day for Tertiary Minerals. Down, what is it? Let me look here. It's down by 4.3% to 1.675, and it's nearing support there, because obviously when we learned of this deal with Posel, that it took a couple of days to sink in, and it went from 0.7, 0.6 and that up to 3.2, so you know, and then came back and settled down at about 2. So it almost tripled. It almost tripled on that news. And of course, after a big rise like that, you're going to get consolidation, and you know, some people banking profits and some of that. But it's at now, I'd say, levels of support that look quite good. This 1.6 level is quite good, I think. It looks very supportive there. So
it does. I think at these current levels, as you say, it is support, and the stock's been fluctuating at just over 2p and coming down to this level. So we're coming down to that support level again. And I think you know, we're in the run up now to some news in a couple of months on the acquisitions and other developments. So it's a very good level to buy in at. Obviously, do your own research, folks. You know.
Yes, I've got to say, because I do hold stock here. I think. Do you hold stock, Al? I think you also. Yeah.
I hold stock too. I've bought at several levels. I bought before the Posel deal, and I bought after the Posel deal. I'm at a good level, very happy. And if it carries on dipping down, I shall probably dip in and buy some more.
Well, do you know what? Like I said, we do hold stocks, so we may be talking absolute rubbish, lying just to pump the stock up. You never know. So do your own research on everything. And I know I've been, you know, every now and again, I get people coming on saying, you just talk about your own stocks. No, I don't. I mean, 99% of the stocks we talk about on this podcast are not what I own. But if I do own a stock, I try and say what it is and try and create a bit of transparency. But I know people on Twitter do pump stocks for 10, 20%. I'm not in it for that. I am a mid to long term holder, and I only invest in companies that I see a good business route strategy that'll last for longer than, you know, a week or so, at least a year, a couple of years, if that, you know. But that's what I'm in it for. I'm in for multiples of my original investment, not just, you know, 10, 20%, you know. And
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Al, what's anything else? Anything else you're looking at?
Well, continuing that theme, I'm going to talk about a company that I'm not currently invested in at the moment, but I'm looking at. And again, you know, on that longer term theme, we've spoken about companies in the past that I suppose, you know, they're not exciting like mining companies. They're ostensibly boring because they produce obscure little electrical components and market them all over the world. Companies like Trifast, but these companies are cash cows. They're steady earners. They pay a decent dividend. And looking at Trifast and what other larger companies have done, I've been looking around to see if I can find other companies that may be at an earlier stage in their evolution that could have the same sort of potential. And I think I might have found one. The company's called LPA Group.
I've just put this, do you know what? I just looked at their final results today just now, because I know you mentioned them before the podcast, before we came on.
Yep.
I want to ask you what we're talking about. And I've hit the follow on Vox Markets already, because I'm looking at that and thinking, hang on, what's the problem here? Have they got, because I always look at a company, look at their market cap straight away. One of the first things I look at is the size of the company. And then I look at any revenue they've got or anything like that. I go to an interims or final results, whichever's, you know, the most current. And so the sales are showing it up 4.9%, say 5%, to 22 million. And their market cap is 21 million. And yet, they're making a loss then. They're making a loss. So it went down, profit before tax. Up.
Pre-tax up 26%
to 1.9 million.
Earnings per share up 70%, 14.4, and the dividends increased by. So this company's paying a dividend, and its market cap is less than its turnover. You know, so and the order book is also up 28% at 22 million. And the CEO said that quarter one of the current year they're absolutely flying. So, you know,
now, do they have debt?
No.
Well, there's go on. Tell us. But what do they do now? Tell us about them anyway.
Okay, well, this company's based in Suffolk, Saffron Waldron. They market their products all over the world. They're LED lighting specialists. They provide electromechanical systems and electrical accessories. They supply rail, aerospace, and defense. But their list of customers is also equally impressive. Airbus, Westland Augusta, Alstom, BAE Systems, BAA, Bombardier, Eurostar, Hitachi, London Underground, Siemens, the French Rail Network, SNCF, Stagecoach, the list goes on. So all of these companies are buying LPA Group products, and yet this company is valued at less than its turnover. Historically, there may have been some issues in the past. I think there was a delay on bringing some revenue or some contracts through in the past. But the full year results, if you study these results today, there's nothing in there that warrants the company being valued where it is. It was trading, I think, a year ago at just over. The year high was 189p, so just under 190p. Currently, it's up slightly today. So it's currently 172p, but in my opinion, this the stock could very well be trading at double where it is now, you know, without really taxing the multiples in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm just looking at what the potential growth will be, but they haven't got any current liabilities. They've got a bank overdraft, 216,000, which is not bank loans, 277,000, not a lot. Non-current liabilities, 2.3 million a loan, which is not too bad because they're making, you know, almost 2 million in profit anyway before tax. So not insurmountable at all. So easy deal. Oh, okay, cool. All right, marvellous. Yeah. LPA. I've never heard of those, but I've just added them to my watch list there. So they've come down a little bit. I mean, let's have a look at the volume there because not a lot of volume because on our final results day, because it just seems like maybe they're not a very well-known company, are they? I don't know.
I think the company have just it's probably, you know, because the investors and traders tend to be looking for the exciting dynamic companies that are sort of mining and bringing sort of mines and energy projects online, and this isn't the sort of stuff maybe that they'd normally look at, so it's probably below the radar for many traders. But if you actually look at what the company does, it's a cash cow. Trading sort of early on this year, the company has traded as low as £1.26 or 126 pence, and it's popped up a bit sort of toward the end of the year. But I mean, we're still nowhere near the sort of year highs. And I mean, if you go back Yeah, I mean, probably over the past 3 years, that it's been as high as £1.90. So, you know, I think if you're looking for something that will pay you a dividend and has got great potential for capital growth, and also a company like this would be attractive, an attractive acquisition for one of the larger electrical component suppliers. You know, this would be a great acquisition, a great fit for one of the bigger suppliers, one of the big global companies, perhaps.
Yeah, marvellous. Well, do you know what? I'm just looking at the outlook as well, and it seems quite. Peter Pollock, the chief executive, said at the end, "We look forward to continuing progress this year and for the future." So he seems quite bright for the future as well. So, you know,
yeah, it does.
No reason why. I mean, the share price has risen a little bit of late. It's gone from like 130 to 180. So you'd think there's, it may need a bit of a breather. But there's also resistance around this level or 190 to £2. So maybe need a little breather to come back a little bit. But definitely one for the watch list, Al. Good spot. And, it's on my watch list already. Now all I want to do is put a price alert on it, and because I always like to buy stock today. I like a bargain. And that's why I'm sitting here in the dark, in the cold, looking at my smart meter, registering 2p an hour. 2p? Oh, it's gone up. That's a 100% increase from 1p per hour.
I like a bargain too, Justin, which is why I'm sitting here with my People's Energy heating and lighting and nice and warm in the office and still, you know.
Who were you with before? Do you know who you were with before People's Energy? Who was that?
Utility Warehouse, which is part of Telecom Plus, isn't it? So, but I noticed that the prices were creeping up, and also the level of service wasn't quite what it had been. So when I saw this, I just thought, yeah, let's give it a go, and absolutely delighted so far. And also, I mean, I don't know how much of a percentage I'm going to get back in terms of their profit share at the end of the year, but to have money come back to you as well as lowering your cost or halving your existing cost, that sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So I will report back in due course when I get that profit share back.
Yeah, because they're saying 75% of profits go to, I'm looking at the website, 75% of profits back to you, 100% green electricity. I look at their, they're not listed, are they? I'm going to look on the company's house and see how they're doing.
Not listed yet, but the exposure they've had already, and also the rate at which they're signing customers up, I would say this would be they probably will take it to market at some point in the near future. Wouldn't surprise me. But they raised money through, was it CrowdCube? Through crowdfunding initially. So it's already crowdfunded. So they've already got a big database of shareholders, and obviously becoming a customer, whether you get profits back in the form of shares or cash, we've yet to see. But it's a great idea either way.
Lovely stuff. Cheers, Al. Speak next week.
Cheers, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Safran Energy, SRON. At 4, Immu Pharma, IMM. At 2, Frontera Resources, FRR. Number 2, Tech Capital, TEK. And of course, I had Clifford Gross on yesterday. Worth looking at. They've got exposure to blockchain. And also, on the pod, well, number one most followed company is United Oil and Gas, UOG. Very impressed by their strategy and how much they've done in the 6 months since they've listed. I wrote a blog about them on the weekend. Worth a read, I think. Do your own research, of course. Also, top five most liked RNSs are from the following companies. At 5, Anglo African Oil and Gas, board changes. At 4, Sound Energy, resources certification and directorate change. At 3, Berkeley Energia, quarterly report, December 2017. At 2, SDX Energy, gas discovery on ONZ7 well, Morocco. And number 1, most liked analysts came from Talao Energy, operational report, quarter ending 31st December 2017. That's it for the podcast. I couldn't remember the year then. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, Don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT Weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.